Way too many first responders are struggling with their fitness, health, and body goals, but you're not alone in that fight. I'm Ted with Fit Responder, and with 11 years experience in law enforcement, as well as being a fitness coach for over 15 years myself, I've created some free resources as well as one-to-one professional fitness coaching for first responders. So I want you to check us out, fitresponder.com, or look us up on Instagram at fit.responder. That's fit period responder. And let's see you there. Chat soon. Thanks and enjoy the podcast.
Stop beating up your expensive sunglasses on the job. Hey, I'm Mike, founder of Frontline Optics, a sunglasses brand based out of San Diego designed for first responders. While working for the fire department, I was constantly breaking and scratching my expensive designer sunglasses at work. I knew there had to be a better way, and the idea for Frontline Optics was born. So what makes us different? We know these shades are going to get beat up, which is why we offer a no-questions-asked replacement program to cover lost or damaged sunglasses. When the time comes to get yours replaced, all you'll need to do is cover a $12 service fee and we'll ship a brand new pair to your door, no questions asked. Additionally, a portion of all sales is donated to the First Responders Children's Foundation, supporting the loved ones left behind by our brothers and sisters who gave the ultimate sacrifice and service to their communities. All our glasses are polarized and we offer free shipping and returns so you can try them risk-free. Not enough? We have Z87 styles available and they're all at a price of $58 or less. Check us out. frontlineoptics.com or on Instagram at frontlineoptics. Use discount code PMPM15 for 15% off. Now enjoy your podcast brought to you by Frontline Optics, sunglasses design with the frontline in mind.
The Poorly Made Police podcast is for entertainment purposes only. This podcast has explicit content and is meant for a mature audience. The views expressed on this Poorly Made podcast reflect the opinions of the guest and host. They do not reflect the opinion of any department or entity. Nothing on this Poorly Made podcast should be construed as legal or marital advice. If something offends you, I kindly invite you to lighten the fuck up. If you want to support this very poorly made podcast, click the link at the end of the description and become a monthly sponsor of the podcast. Or buy yourself some nice Poorly Made Police Memes merch. And of course, take care of the fine sponsors of this podcast. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy the orgasmic sound of a Crown Vic. Oh, hey there. Welcome to another edition of the Very Poorly Made Police Podcast. I'm going to try and be professional. I'm very excited for this one. I have the man, the myth, the legend from the documentary on Netflix right now, Locker, Lover, Stalker, Killer. I have Jim Doty. How are you, buddy?
Doing great. Yourself?
I'm just living a dream. I have to say, as a guy that is now in Iowa, watching that made me very proud of Iowa law enforcement. Not something I've been part of, but I was like, man, these guys are awesome. I was, you know, and it's weird to say, like, I was proud of, you know, you guys for watching a documentary, but like that was some pretty solid police work, man. That was good work.
I appreciate it. Really do.
Also joining the podcast, and they will be sitting off to the side a little bit in their cuff chairs because they were so excited that Jim was coming on. Regulars, Saul and Pepperoni Tony are here. So just a little backstory. So this, the reason I know about this documentary, because I don't watch documentaries, another member of our group sent me a photo of Jim that I happened to make into a meme, and Jim found it funny and it was a good sport about it. And I was like, well, I guess I'll watch the documentary, watched it, really enjoyed it. And now he is here to talk to us about it. I will say, we're not going to go over the whole entire case. If you have not seen the documentary, pause the episode, go watch it and then come back or do whatever the hell you want. I'm not your boss. Before we get into all of that, we need to know, Jim, are you having anything to drink tonight?
I went a little hard yesterday with St. Patty's Day, so
understood.
I'm going to break today. Yeah, yeah.
It was, I got you.
It was an 11 a.m. till 9 p.m. type of day. So,
all right. So you're a pro gamer too?
Oh yeah.
I've been trying to refrain from the alcohol as much, but I was kind of going through my fridge and I was like, what kind of beer would Jim be into? And you seem like you could be a Natterday kind of guy. Did I get it right?
I mean, a Lone Star. Then you'd hit me spot on, or a Coors.
Okay, so you're a simple guy. Like you're for the classics. See, yeah. I pegged you. No pun intended.
Hope you didn't.
for a natty light kind of guy. Right off the bat, I want to learn about your whole career and how you got into policing. But Pepperoni Tony's here for only a short time, and he had a question for you that I'm going to kind of hijack. When Netflix came to you, was it part of the deal, you know, that you had to look like the Tiger King to be on the documentary?
No. So this is probably like the sixth show we've done on the case. And every other time I've wore like a shirt and tie, suit and tie type of thing, trying to represent the sheriff's office, I guess. But I knew this was probably going to be the last one. It was going to be Netflix. So I was just like, you know what? I just want to do what I want. So I just went for it.
Okay. So I got to ask, is that the gym we saw in the documentary? Is that like normally how you roll, or were you going for like Hulk Hogan that day or what?
I mean, I can't wear that to work per se, but you know, if I'm out, I mean, you're going to see me all cowboyed up, just kind of doing what I do.
Okay. So the handlebar
vibe, you know? Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
The handlebar, that's all the time. You party all the time.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I respect that. I respect going out in style on Netflix. Tony, I saw you unmuted yourself. Did you have a question?
I just wanted to say, I guess he decided to go big or go home since it was his last hurrah with this, it seems.
Well, 100%. I mean, that's why I'm proud of the old fringe jacket and everything too.
You know what? I'm here for
it. I commend him for it.
You can't have fun anymore, and you had fun. So I appreciate that. I mean, as much fun as you can on a murder case, I suppose.
Well, yeah.
So before we get into all the stuff with the documentary, I want to learn a little bit about you. How did you end up in law enforcement?
Well, kind of by accident. I was actually getting my master's to be a licensed mental health practitioner, and I wanted to be a counselor. A buddy of mine said he's trying out for the sheriff's office, and I was like, yeah, you know, I don't know. I'd try it out, I guess, seeing if I could pass the physical and all that. Passed all that. They invited me in for an interview a couple months later, offered me the one position they had open, and I actually turned it down because I said, I don't really know what you guys do day in and day out. Can I do like a job shadow? And they're like, well, no, we need somebody to, you know, that we're going to hire now. So I turned it down, did a couple ride-alongs, bothered them about once a month for the next 6 months, and they finally hired me, and I've been there ever since.
How long have you been there?
Since 2007 now.
Okay, so you've been in for a hot minute.
Yeah, a little bit.
So when this kind of was all going on, the case, you were probably, I would have to assume, kind of a new detective at the time, right?
Yeah, I was fairly new detective, only probably a couple of years under my belt at that point. And I'm from a small agency, you know, we only have about 60 sworn. So we have five detectives, and we work everything from, you know, thefts, burglaries, to the very uncommon homicide we have every once in a while.
So just for a little background. So I live in Iowa. I came from Colorado. I think I told you that a little bit when we were messaging. But I find myself occasionally in your neighborhood. There may be some casinos that have stolen some money from me, which I'm a little upset about. And I will get my money back from Horseshoe. You hear that, Horseshoe? I'm coming for you. It's because it's in the same parking lot of the Bass Pro, dude. It's not my fault. It's just like a magnet.
Right?
I can't help that. But often when I'm driving up that way, especially when I'm in Potts County, I see signs for like, apply at the sheriff's office. And I saw that, and I was like, or when I say I saw that, I saw the documentary, and I was like, man, I kind of got to want to go work there. Like, that was awesome. You know, they did actual police work. That is really cool. Has the documentary helped with recruitment? I mean, I don't know if you know anything like that.
I don't know. We only hire probably two or three a year, so I don't know if that's, you know, really had a lot of effect, but it's definitely had a lot of effect on, you know, some notoriety for the three of us that were working the case.
Yeah, I messaged you right after I watched it, and I was like, man, he's a legend. Ryan's a legend. Tony's a legend. Like, that was – it was cool to see just, like, regular guys, like, regular cops doing cop stuff. Like, you watch TV, and it's glamorized and stuff. And you guys are just regular dudes that went out here and just did an amazing job on a case that maybe wouldn't have been solved without actually a little bit of intuition and really looking into it.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely couldn't have done it just me and Ryan. I mean, we definitely had to have Tony on board because he's the digital guy. He's a digital genius there. Had to really put all that stuff together, stuff that I couldn't do, writing programs to sift through all those thousands of IP addresses.
Yeah, that I watched that. And I was like, that's wild. This dude's like the real life Iron Man. He just wrote a program to find it. It was amazing. Something that was in the documentary, and I real quick talking about Tony, he said that, you know, had a tumor and, you know, he passed up getting the surgery to work on the case. Is he like, is everything smooth now? Has he got through that okay?
Yeah, that's probably one of the most common questions I get asked. Yeah, he got it zapped a little bit with some radiation, so it stopped growing. So he's doing good now. Doesn't have to have surgery. And so hopefully it stays at that point and doesn't start growing again.
Okay.
Still working for us. Still doing a great job, too. So
it said, I think at the beginning, he was a reserve. Is he like a full-time deputy now, or is he still a reserve and does the other stuff on the side?
Well, he's still a reserve, but his reserve duties are, I mean, he kind of does a quasi, like, sworn law enforcement job and a digital job because he has that sworn status. He's allowed to, you know, write search warrants and go do, you know, execute search warrants and stuff like that. So a lot of what he does is kind of sworn, but he just hasn't ever had the chance to go to the academy and do the whole thing.
I gotcha. Which is, it's kind of, it's interesting in Iowa that you can go and be a reserve and basically go do almost everything out on the street with the exception of a few things and not go to the academy. That's not quite the case, I think, in a lot of states, but Iowa has that.
Yeah, it probably shouldn't be the case, but that's the way it is.
It's odd. It's interesting to say the least. So here, I guess the initial question about the documentary that I wanted to start out with, because I know sometimes people watch a documentary and they're like, oh, everything in that it's a complete painted picture. Everything in that is completely true, which I didn't get the sense they were making things up in that documentary at all. But did you feel like the documentary accurately captured that event, or were there some pieces missing in your humble opinion?
I think they did a pretty good job. There was detectives that worked the case originally from our department. And obviously, you know, they definitely bought into the fact that Carrie was suffering from bipolar. And so they never really want to be a part of any of it, which I don't blame them. So it doesn't really cover that the sheriff's office was actively working the case to a certain point. But how are they going to cover that when the detectives don't want to be involved? I really thought that this, we've done a Dateline 2020, we've done Snapped and a couple other shows. And I felt like all those shows, they're kind of in there. They kind of, you know, profit off of somebody's tragedy and they're out. This was a lot different. This took over a year for these guys to produce. Everybody involved, like they were really like class acts. They offered everybody counseling, you know, gave a big donation to our memorial scholarship that we have under Carrie's name. So these guys handled everybody involved in the story with the most care, I feel, than anybody else had in the past.
All right. So I found this interesting, and maybe I misinterpreted it, but Dave, did he like play himself in a lot of those parts?
He did. Yeah. Yeah. That's, they had him doing, I mean, he worked as a mechanic and they had him doing mechanic scenes and stuff like that. Yeah. And they did that with me too. When we were processing the car, they're like, we want you to actually,
oh yeah, you know, I remember that now.
Fabric,
yeah, that's
off
right,
the seat and stuff. Yeah. So they had us do a little, you know, kind of some cheesy acting parts, but
yeah, I don't know why that stood out to me. I was like, that dude, like he, that's weird. He's playing his own part, but okay. All right. I'm down. I mean, I guess it's, you know, a little ways removed from it. How does that process work as far as, so it was it a production company or Netflix came over and said, hey, we want to do this? Like from your end, like, is that something you got to get approval, you know, through the chain of command to be part of? Like how does that process work, the approach and approval?
So what these, all these Netflix shows are made by different production companies, and then they then sell the show to Netflix. And Netflix gets a couple rights. Like this production company had no control over what it was named. Netflix gets to title it. So this production company approached us, wanted to do a show. And at this point, we were kind of hesitant because we've kind of just done all these things. And, you know, it takes a toll bringing, you know, Nancy Carey's mother back into the picture and have her have to retell the story. So,
oh yeah.
We were real hesitant on doing another one, but the people were great. And they actually had a director associated with it, unlike all these other projects. So after talking to them for quite a while, we decided to do it. And we also thought it would give us, you know, they were probably going to tell the story with or without us. So we wanted to at least make sure we could tell it the right way.
Fair enough. So one of the things I noticed about this case that I thought was good, and maybe I just worked at a bad agency, but I feel like from the start, you know, some investigatively wise, there were some good things that happened that I don't know if other agencies would have done very well. And maybe because you brought up it was an active case, but like the missing person case, I mean, I thought it was good the car got processed. I think that's something that should happen. I don't know that that always happens on missing person cases, but I feel like that was a getting the car, and then B, you know, even the initial process, getting, you know, fingerprints and stuff like that, I thought was huge. So I don't know. It just seemed from the beginning, a lot of that stuff probably helped later on tying everything together. It was just an observation I had.
Yeah, I think it was good we got the car. I think there's always something important that, you know, anytime you're working a case, you need to communicate with the people that are helping you with the case. So the crime tech at the time just thought it was a stolen vehicle. So she just did the standard, like, I'm just going to dust it for prints, look for receipts, stuff like that. Now, who knows if she would have known this is involved in like a missing persons case, if maybe she would have done something more and maybe we would have maybe found some, you know, blood evidence or something like that at that time. Who knows? But that's one of those things, just we always we'll do some traveling with this and present this to law enforcement agencies. So that's one of the things we always talk about, is keeping the people that work the case with you in the know, so they know everything that's going on, so they know what to look for, just like you would, you know.
Wait, so you shouldn't do the secret squirrel stuff and not tell everybody what you're doing? You're not supposed to do that?
Yeah, probably doesn't help a whole lot.
Oh, weird. I thought that's what you were supposed to do. So the origins of the case, at least on your side of the Missouri River, so it gets called in as a missing person, and that was Carrie's mom, Nancy, that made that initial report, right?
Yeah, it was Carrie's mom.
Okay. How long after she was missing did that report come about? Like a few weeks or a couple days? Or
yeah, just a couple, maybe about a week or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I would assume, like, you know, a deputy goes out and takes it, and then after she doesn't show up, you guys, you know, detectives probably got it. Where did you guys find her car at?
Her car was found at the same apartment complex that Dave lived in. So David's actually, he found the car, which, you know, sure put him on the original detective's radar a little bit. You know, this dude last seen with her, now he's finding her vehicle. So
yeah, it was that pretty soon after the missing person report.
She was reported missing in November, mid-November 2012, and then the car wasn't recovered till January of 2013. So a couple months had gone by before the car was recovered.
Oh, wow. But in that time, all these weird text messages had kind of all started, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I'm sure the people, you know, Dave probably thought, well, she's around because she's sending me all these crazy text messages and crap.
Well, yeah, she had said she even moved into an apartment in his complex. So that's kind of the reason he was out there, like, scouring the complex, because she said she was living there.
Oh, that's right. I remember the scene when he went looking for her. Yeah. So weird he played his own part. I don't know why that was so weird to me. So weird. How did that case catch your attention? How did you become involved in it?
Well, we're a small agency. Like I said, we only got five detectives. So me and Ryan, we'd both heard about the case. And, you know, we're talking 2015 when other detectives are still talking about it. And we think, well, this single mom just vanished and has left her son stranded for the last couple of years. Something didn't ring right to us about that. So, I mean, we kind of approached things a little differently and actually went and asked our boss if we could open up the case instead of our boss coming to us assigning it. We decided to ask to open it.
The original detectives, were they kind of burned by that, or did they even? And I'm not trying to like put you in an awkward spot, but yeah. I know how cops are. Sometimes people get weird about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't think they were a huge fan of us opening up the case. And I'm definitely pretty sure they're not a huge fan of us. You know, I mean, I'm sure they're glad we solved it, but I don't think they probably like all the limelight it's brought. But at the same time, I think they just really bought into that bipolar thing, which I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't have if I was in their same shoes.
Well, and with everything going on, yeah, I mean, it sounded like the Omaha detective was kind of on the same side of that.
Yeah, it definitely was.
Pepperoni Tony, I'm going to have you jump in to ask this question. You had some questions about, you know, how these cases work when it's, you know, different states and stuff like that.
Oh, so I just thought originally that, like, yeah, I guess he cleared it up for me, because I didn't realize that the missing person case came from his jurisdiction. But once he cleared it up, it made sense. So.
Okay, well, never mind. I answered the question.
Yeah, it was our missing person case, and basically we had to take it to the point where we could prove as a homicide that happened in Omaha before they were going to mess with it. But luckily, we had some good detectives over at OPD, their Omaha Police Department, who actually heard us out, even though we were from this small agency, and thought we actually had something good there and presented to their prosecutor. So then we started working on it kind of as a team.
Yeah, that was the next thing I was going to ask is, I'm sure it makes things a little interesting when you guys are working this homicide that probably didn't happen in your jurisdiction, but it sounded like in this case, this was a good example of everybody, you know, being on the same team and working out for the sake of the victim.
100%. I mean, Omaha, I mean, they work homicides all the time. They could have looked at us like, who are these guys, you know, and just not gave us the time of day, but they didn't. And we worked hand in hand with them, and it was a very complex case. So, I mean, it took, I think it almost took about another year before it got prosecuted, before she got charged, because it was so complex.
So the one thing, well, not one thing, but one of the things that stood out to me, like the huge, huge break, was the phone card, the SIM card, which, you know, is not so much a thing anymore. I guess it's still a thing in some phones, but I mean, that's just such a huge break. Is there any theories on how that ended up in there? I mean, was it hidden in there? Was she just reckless on where it was, kind of thing? Do you know?
Well, I think she formatted it. And so I put that into my computer or something like that. I wouldn't see anything on it. And, you know, she wasn't a technological genius. So I think she thought the same thing. It was used to be in her phone. I don't know, back then, if you had memory cards and stuff, they'd go into different devices. So I'm sure she was done with that phone and wanted to use it in this tablet. And just happened that, you know, Tony Cava ends up looking at it later, and he knows how to look for all that deleted stuff and finds that picture of that foot.
Some of the stuff that happened, I'm like, she did so good for so long. And then just the little bit, you know, the mistakes that she made. But boy, like, as cops, you know, there's always the joke, like, oh, if I say something stupid on my body camera, I'm going to huck it into a pond. You'd think that SIM card would have got, like, destroyed and never seen again, but thankfully she wasn't too bright with it.
Yeah, I don't think she knew exactly what she was doing, but she definitely had 2.5 years to learn how to do it, because law enforcement really wasn't looking at her until we started taking the case. So she definitely got better over time. So some of her initial stuff that she did wasn't the smartest, wasn't the greatest, but she learned how to disguise her IP address using VPNs and stuff like that as time went on.
So that brings me to, like, the boyfriend who was also, like, the IT guy for – he was the IT guy for the county, right?
Yeah. And Tony was actually his boss.
Awkward, to say the least.
Yeah.
Was there a worry that he was going to say something to her, or was he kind of not really in the know of what was going on to jeopardize the case? Because I was like, man, that probably could jeopardize the case if, you know, they figure out that, hey, we're on to her.
Well, honestly, I look at Todd as a victim in this whole thing, too, because Todd had no clue. She basically used him for a place to live, for, you know, car, all kinds of stuff. She just used him and was still dating Dave while she's living with Todd, and Todd had no clue. So once we start working this case, we had to put Todd on paid leave, and that stressed him out for months. We had to do a search warrant at his house, even though we didn't think he was a suspect or anything, but because she lived there and things like that. So Todd really, for about a year, went through hell because of this lady. And none of the shows or anything really touch on it. But yeah, he was definitely a victim of this whole deal too.
Okay. You know, it's interesting, you know, looking at this as a far, because for whatever reason, I guess she really liked Dave, but I'm like, God, luckily Todd didn't have a girlfriend too that, you know, she was going to mess with. I mean, it's wild. Like, you know, whatever happened between her and Carrie that made her, I don't want to say made her, I think it's the wrong way to put it, but caused that snap. It's luckily nobody else, you know, was victim of that.
Well, she's definitely 100% obsessed with Dave the whole time. I don't know why, but that was just never any other guys. It was just Dave. And if she couldn't have him, nobody else was.
Okay. This is going to sound kind of weird, but I watched that and I was like, you know, Dave seems kind of cool. Like, he seems like a cool dude. I think I'd have a beer with him. I'd be a little nervous about him, about the way he is with women, but like, he seemed like a pretty cool guy. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, Dave's really cool, real down-to-earth guy. And, you know, I feel bad for him because he just gets just torn up on the internet every time one of these shows airs. And I'm like, I don't know why you still do it, dude, because they're harsh on him. But he is a super nice guy.
What did he do? Seen it.
He's just really, I mean, he was a single guy. He'd been, you know, in a long-term relationship. And so he was just like, I'm going to go enjoy life. And he was forward about his choices with the women he'd see. It's not like he hid it from them, but they just think, oh, you know, he's a womanizer and stuff like that. Or they just, you know, dog on him like all this. For
oh,
this
that
guy,
kind of
you
stuff?
Know?
Oh.
Yeah. But I feel bad for the dude.
Yeah. I feel really bad for that dude. Cause I mean, I couldn't imagine being in that position and then trying to date again. Right. Like after all that he has been through, trying to date again, trying to explain that, like, hey, by the way, she's in jail now, but this happened, you know?
Yeah, well, even after getting some of this airtime, I'm sure everybody's a little hesitant to, you know, you swipe on some guy named Dave, you're like, oh, shit, is that the guy from the documentary?
Yeah, he's going to have to shave or do something so he doesn't look the same.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to the podcast. Attention all law enforcement officers. Looking for a badge as flexible and resilient as you are? Discover Flex Shield by Ghost Patch. Our Flex Shields are not just generic badges. They're custom-made, flexible, metallic emblems designed to replicate your actual badge. Perfect for outer carriers, they come with a durable Velcro backing, making them easy to attach and keep them secure. Looking for a distinguished wallet badge? Flex Shield fits the bill. Why choose Flex Shield? We offer unmatched quality at nearly half the price of our competitors, and we never charge for mold or setup fees. Plus, we're the only ones offering true dual plating, a testament to our commitment to excellence. Proudly law enforcement owned and operated, we understand what it means to wear a badge. Start your custom order today at ghostpatchcustom.com. Flex Shield, the badge of the future.
My next set of questions, then, and I'm sure Saul will have some more because he's more intelligent than I am. And he was a lawyer, so he's more well thought out. He's well spoken. But I watched this and I just kind of got the feeling, like, in my former cop brain, of I think she had help, and not necessarily with, you know, the text messages and stuff, but, you know, disposing a body and all of that stuff. That's kind of where my hinky bone goes off. I don't know if you're able or could talk about your thoughts on that, or if I'm off base.
No, I have some thoughts on that. So when she burned down her house, there's tons of photos taken of her house, and she lives in just the middle of Omaha, you know, very urban type of area. And the weird thing is, when I was looking at those photos, I noticed that she has a burn barrel in her backyard, and her backyard was very, very overgrown. So I've always had that theory that she had that burn barrel, and that was something she used to dispose of the body. And I think she did do it by herself. I don't think she had help. I think she had that burn barrel, and I think she had herself just living in her house by herself for a while, that she had all the time in the world she needed to do.
Fair enough.
That's,
I guess I never
that's just
thought
my theory.
I'm not this is gonna come like this is gonna sound bad. I'm not trying to be disparaging or anything, but I feel like she'd have a hard time. Why am I worried about being disparaging to a murderer? She doesn't seem like she'd be strong enough to lift a body and move it around. You know, I've you know, had to deal with dead bodies, the whole dead weight thing kind of thing. Not to be like, you know, graphic or rude about it, but I just, that's my thought on it. But you obviously, you know her better, know the case better. But that was, I know a question a couple of us had is like, oh, how did she move a body by herself? Maybe she's strong and lifts weights. I don't know.
We're pretty sure it happened in the car because we had that big blood spot on the passenger seat. So kind of our theory is she did something that morning, got into Dave's apartment while Carrie's there, and somehow got Carrie to get in the passenger side of her vehicle, whether she acted like she had a gun or she did it knife point. I mean, who knows, but gets her in the passenger side of that vehicle, kills her there. And then I think you drive that vehicle home, you pull it in your garage, and you got time to do whatever you needed to do. That's my theory, at least.
That's fair. So I'm gonna have you jump in right now. What you got? Some questions, some things I missed?
Just a couple things I was curious about. What's up, man? Nice to meet you virtually.
Oh, sorry, I'm really bad at introductions. My apologies. My wife hates me for that.
So like you said, I practiced law for 21 years, and I spent the first half of that, believe it or not, as a public defender. So there were a couple things that stood out to me that I had questions about. The first one is, are her appeals all done?
Yeah, you get an automatic appeal when you get a life sentence in Nebraska. And so she had that. And yeah, now she's all out.
Have you guys ever tried to approach her to get her to, or is she still just living in denialville?
I mean, there's kind of this, we heard when she first went to prison that she was telling people that she was actually Carrie. It's really weird saying that they got the wrong person, that she was actually Carrie. So once we heard that, we just kind of let her lie. And it's like, we're not going to go try to talk to this lady. But every time we did try to interview her, she was always really cold. I mean, she would never admit to anything. So I don't think she would now.
Yeah, I never represented anybody who was legitimately crazy who would admit that they were crazy. The other question I had for you was, how on earth did that go to trial without a jury?
Well, I think it was a smart idea for her to do a bench trial because I think a jury would have hated her. You know, going through all this stuff she'd done for years, they would have hated her. But a judge is going to look at that and be like, well, they don't have a body. They don't necessarily have a weapon. And they kind of don't have a scene. How can we even prove that this actually even happened in Omaha and it didn't happen in Iowa? So I thought it was a smart idea to do a bench trial because I think the judge would have to just look at the letter of the law, where a jury would be more influenced by, you know, how horrible of a person she is.
I'd be really curious to know everybody else. Take that, because I have the complete opposite take on it. I've tried numerous murder cases. Like, there are certain arguments that work well with juries that a judge who's jaded, been on the bench and sat through all that stuff, they are not nearly as emotionally persuaded. So in 21 years and trying a lot of cases, I have never in my life waived a jury. So that was the biggest thing as somebody who's done that struck me, that not having a body, not having a weapon and all that other stuff, that's the things that the quote unquote jury / Netflix viewers really latch onto. And it gives you at least a chance to argue something. As soon as I saw that there was no jury, I was like, oh yeah, I didn't need to even see what the verdict was because I knew what it was going to be. It struck me as an incredibly odd choice for the defense to make. I think it worked out great, obviously, for you guys and the prosecutor. If I were the prosecutor and the defense did that, I'd be like, sweet. But yeah, that just kind of struck me as a trial lawyer. I thought it was a terrible idea on the defense, but I also don't know anything about the case, obviously.
Well, I just, you know, we're from the middle of America here. I feel like, you know, that we just painted her as just this horrible lady who killed a single mom, you know, and I feel like a jury would be like, damn, how are you that cold? Where, I mean, really, we had a picture of a foot and a blood stain to prove that somebody was murdered. I mean, that's not as great as a lot of your murder cases where you have a whole body, you know?
To be fair, what I'm saying is you go from IC trying that case based on what I saw to a judge as 100% chance of conviction. And if you tried it to a jury with no body and no murder weapon, you've got like a 95% chance of conviction. So I'm not saying it would have gone any differently, but like I've tried enough of those that your odds are not good, that you grasp at whatever you can. So it's more the dumb and dumber version of trying a case of you're saying there's a chance.
What are your thoughts on if we wouldn't have found that SD card with the foot? Because we had already charged and we were awaiting trial when we found that SD card with the foot. So at that point, all we had were some messages and that blood stain in the car. What are your thoughts on that? That's all we would have had.
I think the blood stain would have been really hard to overcome. So again, this is kind of a shot in the dark, not seeing everything that there is to possibly see. I was always a proponent of if you have two things that go in the good fact, bad fact list, if I'm trying the case. So good fact for the defense is that there's no body. Bad fact is that there's blood on the seat, right? So if I'm looking at big picture, if I can figure out some way to explain the blood on the seat, that might get rid of those, might be a wash. And so I always look at it when you have the photo then and you're able with the venous stuff to say that it was a photo of the victim when she's deceased.
Yeah.
That ties in nicely, obviously, with the blood. And that's a huge problem. I think that was it took it from a coin flip to a much more sure case at trial.
Yeah, 100%. We were stressing there with just that blood stain. Just do we have enough? And there's something another that they don't really cover in the documentary. Like I said, we're a small agency. So this thing goes to trial in May. We're all full-time trial prep. And on May 1st of 2017, we had a guy that escaped our jail and shot two of our deputies and killed one of them. So while we are trial prepping for the biggest trial of our life, we're also planning a brother's funeral, which is something that it doesn't really ever get covered, but it was something that played a pretty significant role for all of us.
Oh man, I didn't even know that. That's horrible.
Yeah. Made this a downer there. I apologize.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, honestly, while we're here, you mind giving a shout out to the fallen officer there?
Yeah, it was Deputy Mark Burbridge. He was a detective for a little while too, so knew him pretty well. And it was just, you don't expect that to happen in a small little Pottawatomie County, you know. Luckily, the other officer that was shot, Pat Morgan, he recovered fine and retired a couple of years later, so he's still doing good.
I wanted to ask about the trial as far as the I don't know if you can do an impersonation on somebody that's deceased, but I assume that was information allowed at trial, was like, hey, she's been impersonating Harry for this long. I assume that was part of it, right?
Yeah, it was. And
okay,
to be able to prove that, Tony Cava he had a 1,000 slide PowerPoint that was submitted as a demonstrative exhibit to show all this evidence that shows that Liz had been doing this perpetrating for years and years and years to prove that. And that reason that's important is because she ended up sending those confessional emails posing as this Amy lady that admitted to everything that happened to Carrie. So the impersonation was a big part because we had to prove that this was actually Liz sending those confessional emails.
So I'm going to make this about me really quick. Cause this is important information. So where she shot herself, that was called Big Lake Park or something?
Yeah.
Okay. How's the fishing there?
I swear to God.
They stocked a little pond there, so it's stocked. I mean, I guess you can do a little bit of fishing.
Okay, so it's not great.
You want to hear another theory about that whole shooting thing?
Yeah.
So Amy, the lady who Dave has kids with, mm-hmm. lives about a quarter mile away from that park. Liz doesn't live around that park. There's really no reason Liz should be around that park. But we do know she was stalking Amy on a regular basis. That night, they shot herself. She had a wig in her car. We really think that she had a pretty long deliberation to determine if she was going to go shoot Amy or if she was going to shoot herself, and luckily decided to shoot herself instead of take Amy out.
And that, and it's been a week since I watched the documentary, so maybe I'm missing a part, but that was the gun that was in Dave had, right?
Yeah, that was stolen from Dave's. Yeah.
Now this is where I'm going to kind of give a little hate for Dave. It's like, dude, you got to get like better locks, man. Like, she'd been doing this for a while and she broke in your house and stole a gun. Come on, Dave, step up your lock game. Like, call ADT or something, you know?
Right.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
What they didn't cover that I was also curious about, was it obvious to you guys right away that it was a self-inflicted wound to the leg? Can you talk about the wound and if it was obvious?
The doctors that looked at it were kind of split. Some said they couldn't decide which part was the entry and exit, so they couldn't say for sure it was self-inflicted. But officers went over to Amy's right after it happened. You know, her car was cold to the touch. She was there with her kids. So basically ruled out Amy as a suspect. And there, I mean, that park doesn't have anybody in it at that time of night. So it wasn't like it was a robbery or anything like that. So it was pretty quick that we're like, eh, Liz did this to herself.
Okay, really? But it wasn't specific on the wound.
No, nothing specific on the wound.
Real quick, we had another visitor enter the podcast. Pepperoni Tony had to go and do bicycle things. But Ahsoka is here. Ahsoka, how are you?
I'm living the dream. How are you?
I am good. Do you have any questions for Jim? I know you kind of got in late, but...
Okay, so I just came in with this whole shooting part. What did she do with the gun after she shot herself? Where did that go?
So it's like it's a marshy area there, so mm-hmm. She was on a bridge. So we're pretty sure that she just tossed it in that marshy area. The winter before this case really started breaking, we went out there with a metal detector when it was iced over and marked a couple places we were going to check for the gun. But then the case started accelerating, and the gun didn't really ever prove anything that was necessary, so we just never went back. So it could still be out there.
Oh, I know what I'm looking for when I go fishing.
Oh, God.
I'll call you if I find something when I go fishing. I'll let you know.
Perfect.
That'll really make it about me. okay. As far as the case goes, I mean, I feel like that answered a lot of my questions as far as it being wrapped up and you know, kind of the case is closed kind of thing. I don't know if you're still close with any of the people involved, but, you know, how's Nancy? How's Max? You know, in fact, how's Dave and Amy? Are they doing better since this is hopefully a little ways behind them?
Yeah, I've sent Dave a couple texts and we've exchanged a couple texts, but last Monday, there's this restaurant in Macedonia, that little small town where Carrie's from. They shut down the restaurant Monday and had me, Nancy, Ryan, Tony, and the prosecutor, Brenda, just come out there and serve this dinner. So we had a good chance to kind of catch up with Nancy. And she's doing good as you can after, you know, going through something like this. But Max is doing good, too. He's married and has a kiddo and all that and got a good career going. So for what they went through, they're doing great.
That's good. Yeah, it's, you know, the whole thing is just so messed up, you know, and granted, you know, Carrie wasn't there for, you know, she'd been murdered, but it's the whole, you know, because we've, as a cop, you've had the case of like, oh, you know, this girl won't stop texting me. She won't leave you alone, but it's like a day or two, you know, I think one of my first DV arrests was like a gal sent like a dude like 72 messages within like 2 hours or something. But that's usually, you know, they get through it, they get over it, it's done, it's over with. But, you know, this went on for so long. It's incredible that she kept it going for so long. I mean, it's wild to me. I mean, if she, let me just get your opinion on this. If she just stopped texting and just let it go, or never texted at all, I mean, maybe she gets away with it potentially.
Yeah,
I don't
she
know.
Would have just done it and not sent any of those messages. I mean, but she did some cold hearted things, like the stuff she messaged Nancy and Max posing as Carrie. I mean, just there was something wrong where that wasn't enough to just take Carrie out of the picture. She had to go further and tear Carrie's reputation apart. I feel like that was part of her goal too, not just get Carrie out of the picture.
And they met the one time, right? That was it. And just in passing.
Just brushing by outside of Dave's apartment.
Wild. Just wild.
Can I ask a quick question about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I always, in all the cases I handled, I always found that you can't contain crazy. Like, crazy always finds a way. So it didn't overly shock me that she couldn't let it go. Did they ever try to run any sort of mental state defense with her?
No, they didn't try to do anything like that. But I definitely, you know, there's a book about this case too that's out there, and it covers some time where she lived in Michigan, and her baby ended up dying when she was in Michigan, and her partner ended up getting charged with it. And there's a lot of theory that she might have killed her own baby too, and maybe set this guy up. I mean, there's a whole nother can of worms there, but I don't think this was her first dabble into craziness. I think she's been that way for a long time.
Oh, wow. I mean, that's a huge revelation. Is there, and I'm sure there's a ton of stuff, but is there a couple things you could pick out that are important to this case that were not really mentioned in the documentary or any of the TV specials?
I don't know. Did this one cover the messages she sent to Max? Because I always find those.
I don't think it was. I don't think it did. No.
So Max, he's a smart kid. He's really smart. So she sent him some messages and he just kind of ignored them. But as this thing was heating up, he's like, I want to know if this is my mom. So he sends her like three questions, like, what's the name of our first dog? And a couple other questions that only Carrie would know the answers to. And obviously Liz doesn't reply because she doesn't know the answers. So at this point, Max knows, this is not my mom. But what's heartbreaking is right before his graduation, he reaches back out to this person he knows not his mom and says, Mom, this is really you. Can you show up to my graduation? And that, I mean, that just, it's tear-jerking stuff there. Heartbreaking.
Yeah, that is, that's awful, man. That whole, ooh, that's bad. Tony, Saul, Ahsoka, do you guys have any more questions before Instagram had a few questions for him, and then he's not going to escape my dumb questions. Did you guys have any more questions about the case before we move on?
I have an important question.
This is clearly not going to be important, but go on.
Where do you find those fucking shirts?
All right, right? There's some good shirts, aren't there?
Goodwill.
I'm glad now we're talking about the good stuff.
Yeah, the good stuff.
Probably my favorite thing somebody posted about this whole show was they wrote, that cop wearing full Walker Texas Ranger was very distracting.
But so, like, say, do you find them in like cool vintage stores, or do you, what? You got to give us the secret here because everybody knows.
I mean, yeah. So what you need to do. So I got married yesterday. Wait, no, Sunday. No, Saturday.
Congratulations, okay, man. The two biggest moments of your life, being on this podcast and being married within a couple days. Yeah.
So you'll have to check out the suit. It's out there on Instagram, and that thing is...
Okay. Whew, three
that
things.
Out of control.
One, congrats. Two, should probably remember that fucking date moving forward, especially if it's only 3 days
old. 100% right.
And that's from a guy who's done a few of them. And then third... is you're on the worst honeymoon ever right now, but sorry, go on.
Okay, yeah,
I think we're talking about where you buy your shirts from.
Yeah, I mean, I just all over the place, usually a lot of internet, you know, just scour for something that's cool, something that has a good honky tonk vibe to it.
So are you a native to the area? Are you, where are you from?
Born and raised in Council Bluffs, Iowa.
Look at that, man. Yeah. My mom's side of the family is from Omaha, and I absolutely, to this day, I fucking hate Omaha, man. I don't know what it is about Omaha. I hate it. But you may appreciate this. So when we went to visit from Colorado, we'd always stay in Council Bluffs because apparently it was cheaper. And there was a Hojo off of I-80, and I could never remember where it was. And I just it's by like a Goodwill now. Do you know the one I'm talking about? I don't think it's a Hojo anymore, but that place was magical as a kid.
Yeah, I think I kind of do.
It looks pretty dumpy, and now I'm like, oh, this is why we stayed here. Got it. Okay, sweet. Council Bluffs. All right, I got some Council Bluffs stories real quick for you. And I know, you know, you're a deputy, but what's the main drag in Council Bluffs? It's US 6, but what's it called there?
Broadway,
okay. Me and one of my buddies who couldn't make the podcast, which we'll have to talk about him in a second. We were coming back from a concert, and we were staying over at the casinos, but we stopped at the Casey's off of Broadway. That place was magical at 2 a.m. Let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
That was awesome. I felt like I was in inner city Denver metro area again with all the different walks of life in that Casey's. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's there's a lot of that in Council Bluffs. I mean, we don't get the name Council Tucky for nothing, you know?
Oh, I've never heard that one before. Never heard it. I'm going to start that one. That's good. I'll steal that. Yeah, I actually, you know, I was kind of joking with you. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm going to go play for Potts County. I feel like Potts County, like that type of place, that type of agency where you have a metro area nearby or kind of in the metro area, but then you also have the, you know, the deputy life too. I got to think that's probably a really good type of agency to work for. A lot of variety in the work.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy it because it's not crazy busy like if we worked for Omaha or something like that. But we still get enough big things that trickle into our neck of the woods that keeps it interesting.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and be right back to the podcast. Oh, hey there, it's just me. Just got a couple quick things for you guys. Wanted to remind you, in the podcast description and on the meme page, I got a link tree that has all your favorite poorly made stuff. You can get to the Ghost Patch stuff that we do together. You can also get the Flex Shield by Ghost Patch. Got our friends Officer Privacy, Fit Responder, Frontline Optics, Revelations Training, and then, of course, a link to my merch. So make sure you guys are checking that out for everything poorly made. And one last thing before I let you get back to the podcast. The very last thing you see on every single podcast is a link. That's how you become a monthly donor / sponsor to the podcast. You can do that if you love the podcast and you want to help a fella out, or if you just feel sorry for me, go ahead and click that link to be a monthly donor. Now, back to the podcast.
All right, so we're going to hit the Instagram questions. And there's
wait, I have a question.
Okay.
It's not case related. It's a personal question for our guests here.
I'm here for it.
Okay. So I was a bit of a stalkerish, right? Don't worry, I'm not going to kill anyone or anything. Going through your page, and you still doing the bike stuff?
The bike patrol? Bike patrol? Yeah, I still do the bike patrol.
Okay. How are the calves?
Well, we only do it once a week during the summer. We have this trail called that everybody does the taco ride, and they get tacos and drink beer on it. So we do patrol out there once a week. So we split it up, and then also got us e-bikes for the crew last year. So now it's even easier.
That's gay. Not a real bike.
Some spandex, Tony. Don't worry.
It's not the same. He's not a real bike cop if he's using an electric bike. It's not the same thing. You gotta use the legs, man. That's where all the work comes in.
Tony, when you guys come out, let's go get some tacos off the Wabash this summer.
We're come out here for Ragbri. That'll get you a good bike workout.
I have no idea what was said, but sure, why not?
Ragbri is a bike across the whole state.
I'm for it.
It's flat the whole way.
We give Tony a lot of shit for being a bike cop, so he's trying to spread that around a little bit, just so you're in on the joke.
Oh, I was going to ask you, did you happen to work either on or off duty at the Mastodon concert in your county last year?
I did not.
Okay, because we were trying to figure out, we went to a POTS deputy, and I tried to give him a patch. And he was kind of weird about it. Another guy ended up taking it. I was like, oh, was it him that wouldn't take our patch? I thought we were going to have some beef, but it wasn't you, so.
It wasn't me.
All right. Now, were you at the Mastodon concert, or is that not your thing?
Not really my vibe. We go to a lot of concerts, though, but it's more of a, you know, classic country honky-tonk type stuff.
Mm. All right. Fair
he
enough.
He just said Mastodon sucks.
No, he did not.
Yes, he did.
I bet. You know what? I'm going to invite him, Ryan, and Tony to go see Mastodon with me this summer. And then they'll be like, cool, Mastodon's awesome. And then they're going to come see him on a Moth in Omaha with me. All right? It'll be fun.
Yeah, that'll be awesome.
Perfect. Yes.
All the black shirts in the crowd, and you're going to be able to see him from the moon.
Oh, yeah. They'll be like, it's that guy from the documentary. His autograph.
Hey, we're all going to be out there. If you want to join us for dinner, we can have a like worst Western shirt contest.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely there for that.
All right. It's going to be at Harrah's.
I'm just making up events and committing you all to it. So you're welcome.
Oh, wait. No. Let's go to the casino. I always lose that. They have a little cafe in there. We're going to go to Horseshoe and have a Western shirt off.
Oh, you've got great issues, but I like
great
it.
Great idea.
Oh, God. Yeah,
it's the best idea I've ever heard. So, Jim, you got a lot of questions about what it takes to maintain that mustache. Do you have some tips?
Oh, yeah. So, the wife, the hairstylist, so she does all the hard work keeping this thing in shape.
That explains a lot why that's so perfect, because dudes aren't
capable. It's also her vibe too, so she hypes it up all the time.
Okay, but is it because of her? Like, is it your vibe and she shares it with you, or are you doing it because you're a good man?
I don't feel like we have a good checks and balance together, because I'm like, hey, should I wear this? Or should I, you know, wear this hat? Should I buy this? And she's like, hell yeah, you should. It looks awesome. And then, so we just keep escalating it by, she doesn't stop it.
You never let her go.
You find a lady that supports you in things like this, and you do not. Yeah.
Right.
100%. Somebody wants to know how much you charge for mustache rides.
Well, now that I'm all locked in, I guess those are all to Sarah now.
Oh, look at that.
Sorry, Saul. Can't get a mustache ride.
One can dream.
Okay, hold on a second. If we're actually gonna do this and meet somewhere, we all have to shave our mustaches like that. I'm just saying.
Well,
I'll do it
anyway.
I might do it. You know what? I might shave when I get done with the podcast. I'm so inspired. I want to be like you.
I stay married this time, so I don't know if I can commit to that.
So Jim, you're a sergeant now. Are you sergeant over like patrol or over investigations?
Over investigations.
Okay.
They're not gonna kick him out of investigations for all this cred. Fucking nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, some agencies make you go work patrol and then you can come back. I didn't know if he got to stay as a sarge.
I did. That's for a year and then I went back, so.
Quit interrupting him, Saul, with your bad internet. You said you did it for a year and then you got
to
go back.
Yeah, I went out for a year to do the patrol sergeant and they brought me back in. So
how do you get a hard time from the guys and gals for being on Netflix documentaries and all that stuff?
Oh yeah. Yeah. 100%. They're all honestly probably pretty sick of it. Cause like I said, this is probably the fifth or sixth show we've done on it and had a book and all that. So every time they're like, oh, Farber case again, you're going to work something else? You're going to solve another case, or are you just still milking that thing? So I hear that pretty regularly.
Here's the opportunity here for you to like prove to your guys and the world that you do other police work. Do you have another case that you're really proud of?
Honestly, something I think, not all of us are from big agencies, you know? So I think probably very few agencies have like cold case divisions. So when I became sergeant, we didn't have a cold case division. Nobody ever looked at our cold cases. So I just decided, hey, somebody should probably do this stuff, and end up solving a murder from 1983. It was a lady from Iran that was up here in Omaha, going to University of Nebraska, Omaha, and her body was ditched over in Pott County. And one of the items had two different blood types because that's what they did in 1983. And so it was so easy. You just send that into the lab. DNA hit for her, DNA hit for a serial rapist. So, I mean, that's kind of my my plea to people out there that work for smaller agencies is take a little initiative, run through those cold cases, because some of them could be literally that easy and you solve a murder.
I assume at this point the suspect was probably long dead or no?
No, he's still alive. He's just gotten out of prison and was kind of living the transient homeless life, and now we put him back in there.
Good, good. He can't hurt anybody else. Yeah, I feel bad, you know, for a lot of the smaller agencies where they, you know, they don't have, you know, a ton of manpower that do that type of stuff. If I'm right, though, and I don't know what it's called, in Iowa, at least for the smaller agencies, they have the state helps them out with some of that stuff, the bigger investigations, right?
Yeah, if you had like a homicide, the state, DCI would come out. But at the same time, I don't know if DCI does a lot of cold case or not. I'm not 100% sure. They may, but for our agency, we're big enough where we don't ever use DCI, but we're also not big enough to have, you know, specialized divisions in our investigations or anything like that.
I gotcha. So I think at this point, again, you know, I don't want to skip over. Well, actually, let me make sure I didn't screw anybody on Instagram that had a good question. But here's a good one. Tactical advantages of the cowboy hat. Is it better than an 8-point hat?
I mean, I wish I could wear it at work, honestly. I'd love to convince the sheriff to let me wear that all the time, but I don't think it's going to happen.
You know, I find it odd that, especially in Iowa, a very rural state, that the sheriff's offices here, nobody wears cowboy hats. I think that's wrong. Right? You're sheriff. Wear a cowboy hat.
It needs to change.
That's the way it should be. I mean, when you think of America, you think of cowboy hats and six shooters.
Right?
This used to be a proper country. I'm just saying.
That's a sheriff's office, right?
So, I propose that Jim run for sheriff, and he can make that change.
Honestly, I think our sheriff is kind of trying to work on getting that because he likes the cowboy hat. So I think we're in good hands, hopefully. Hopefully he achieves it.
And we can all agree that 8-point hats are the douchiest of all the hats.
Dude, leave my hats alone, all right? That's the only thing. All my power came from that hat, okay? All of it.
Says everything we need to know about you.
I'm nothing without my hat.
He's been trying to rock that hat since the most security days.
You know what? You got to start somewhere, okay? I had humble beginnings. You can't be mad at me for my very humble beginnings. How dare you? All right. We're at the point where I have a bunch of dumb questions for you. Okay? Are you ready?
Can I say something quick before you ruin his reputation with these questions?
Oh, sure. Sure. Go ahead, because I'm going to.
Jim, I really was worried you were going to be a douche when you came on this. I won't lie. And I have never been happier to be more wrong. Fucking right on, dude.
I appreciate it.
I will gladly buy you a Coors, my friend.
This Coors. Is the first time on Earth ever that Saul has admitted he's wrong. I'm just throwing it out there. Get a plaque.
Since when did my ex-wives come on the show? All right.
You know what? Yeah, you know what? I'm going to leave that alone. I'm not going to make fun of your failures. It's fine. Okay. So what I like to ask people, this question had its humble beginnings as a big fuck you to our friend Saul here, because he doesn't like fishing. And so I talk to people about fishing if they like fishing. Now, I've kind of changed it a little bit so it doesn't fit specifically to my needs. Although I will ask you off the bat if there's any good fishing spots in your county. But what do you like to do to blow off steam off the job to decompress?
I think we go to a lot of concerts. That's probably our favorite thing. We got
not Mastodon,
but there's kind of a couple small venues here that you can kind of see some up and coming artists and actually get to meet them and stuff. And that's probably our favorite thing to do around here.
I'll have to check that out. Okay, but the fishing spots, are there good fishing spots in your county that I need to know about?
I know I have a look like I'm quite the fisherman and hunter, but I don't do any of that, so I got no clue. I'm no help here at all.
See, I saw all that and I was like, oh, he's going to know the spots and it's going to be awesome. All right. That's okay. I'll just have to get another POTS deputy on and figure it out. Although I have fished at the like Farm Creek ponds or something kind of, I guess that's in your county, isn't it? Way out east. Does that sound familiar? Yeah, something like that.
It's been a while since I've been on the road, but it sounds right.
Sounds right. Yeah, he's a busy detective. He's on Netflix documentaries. He can't get out into the county anymore. All right. I feel like you could have an opinion about this. What is the best type of sauce?
Sauce. Are you talking like a condiment type thing?
Yes.
Sauce. I mean, I'm just going to stick with the good old ranch. I mean, I feel like you can't go wrong with that.
Every person from the Midwest has said ranch so far, and I'm very happy about that. Yeah. That is the correct answer. You know, speaking of Midwest things, these guys are not believers, and I feel like you could make them believers. Casey's Pizza is pretty good, right?
Oh, Casey's Pizza is so good.
Thank you.
Here's a little trick with it, all right? You get the breakfast pizza, and you have them sub out the cheese sauce for biscuits and gravy sauce for your pizza sauce, and that is the best pizza ever.
Okay, that is the most American thing I've ever heard.
Hold on. Sir, let me ask you a question. Have you had New York pizza and Chicago pizza before?
I mean, yeah, I've had that. I've been to New York and Chicago and had pizza, but...
Hold on.
Casey's breakfast pizza.
All right. First of all, Casey's not real pizza. Even though I have not had it yet, it's not real pizza. But anyway, who do you think has better pizza, Chicago or New York?
Chicago.
Oh my God! Get this guy out of here!
You know, forget about it.
Pretty amazing. That was the correct answer.
No, that was the first time I've heard his New York accent. He got so upset that the accent came out.
Hold on.
Today just came in first place instead of 9/11 for Tony. That's how bad that is.
Hold on.
Wow. Okay.
You're the one telling us not to make bad jokes. That was bad.
What about pineapple on pizza? Are you for or against
it? Hell no.
Thank you. All right. So I'm back in your guys' corner now. Yes. At least we got that.
So now, obviously,
do that?
Say what now?
Ranch on your pizza. You ever dip it the crust?
Oh, you got to.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now I won't. I've seen some people put ranch all over the pizza. That's wrong.
Dipping it is okay.
All right. So if you had a time machine, Jim, and you could have gone back in time, would you pick the same path you took? Or do you think you would have been happier if you went the other route as far as being a counselor and stuff like that?
I'm 100% glad I chose this route. I mean, I never thought I'd be a detective, let alone actually solve some significant cases and then be sergeant of investigations too. I mean, I really never imagined this. I thought, oh, you know, maybe I'll work road patrol and maybe work up to corporal and sergeant before I retire at some point. So I didn't have big aspirations, but I'm very happy that my career has gone the way it has and wouldn't change it at all.
You know, and I'm not trying to blow you up too much, but like, I'm not going to lie. Like I watched the documentary and I was very impressed. And what really came off to me, you know, sometimes people can kind of be phony, but I never got that thought. And talking to you, I feel like you're a pretty genuine dude. You care. And I think especially for a cop and especially for a detective, to be empathetic and actually care about what you're doing, which I think, you know, people get jaded and angry sometimes. I think that's lost on how important that is in law enforcement, is to actually care about what you're doing. So I'm glad you made the choice you made.
Well, thank you. Yeah, this one was, Carrie was just a name, you know, on a report. And it wasn't really until you met Nancy and Max that she kind of came alive. And you weren't really working for Carrie as much as you were working for them at that point. And it kind of changed the dynamic for all of us.
So when you get done with law enforcement, actually, you know what? I want to take a step back, because you said you never imagined yourself being a detective. Was there like a story on how that kind of came to be? You know, you just kind of got burnt out patrol, or just was there something that happened? You're like, hey, I want to give detective a shot.
Well, again, I didn't even know what police work even was when I started. So I just kept working and thought, you know, I think I would enjoy working something a little bit bigger than just, you know, putting out the fires on patrol, to actually put something substantial together. So that kind of intrigued me, just to, you know, use your mind and abilities a little bit more and have some bigger effect, you know, put people in actual prison instead of jail for a night type of thing.
I gotcha. Now, being a deputy in rural Iowa, I got to assume there were times where you were called to cows in the road and you had to corral them back. Yeah. It's a real thing, I've heard. So, Jim, do you have big plans? You know, obviously you're still, you know, a young guy in the middle of your career, but do you have plans for yourself when retire? What would you like to do?
I probably want to retire around 50. So I only got like 10 years left. And then I have no clue what to do then. Probably do a little traveling with the wife and enjoy life. I'm already enjoying life quite a bit. So just enjoy it even more, I guess.
Yeah. You know, that's a thing people should strive to do. And I think we forget sometimes that time's short. Have a little bit of fun. Who cares? Look like Tiger King on Netflix. Do whatever you want to do.
Right. Do it. Grow that mustache.
Grow that mustache. You might not ever get that chance again. Now, we're going to go back to this time machine a little bit. If you could go back in time to young Jimbo, first day at FTO, and give your younger version of yourself advice about your policing career, what would you tell yourself?
I would tell myself never work midnights. That was the worst 2 years I had. Didn't sleep well, got fat. So I would say just stay on afternoons. Skip the midnights for me personally.
But did you have a choice though? I assume knew you kind of got screwed.
I could have stayed on afternoons and kept working, but I thought, oh, I'll work nights and then I'll have my days free. But
this is a part where we get a little stupid here. We're kind of getting towards the more stupid questions, but dildo story. Do you have a good dildo at work call or story that you could share with the followers?
I mean, I was brand new, like hadn't even started FTO, just doing ride-alongs while they're finding uniforms for you and stuff too. And that was like my first, I mean, you know, everybody that does meth has a whole box of them when you're doing a search warrant and stuff like that. And I just had no clue about that world. And I was helping out on search warrant and obviously veteran cops like, hey, Jim, this box is for you. We need you to catalog this thing. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm here to help. Open up the box. It's all dildos. And I was like, you really need me to catalog this? And he messed with me for a little bit, but eventually he's like, nah, it's fine. But that was my first exposure to it.
Now, obviously, you know, you care and you're a detective. But as a patrol guy, you know, at first I really hated dead guys. And then it became kind of interesting. And then some of them were kind of funnier than others. And, you know, obviously you have real sad ones. But do you have a favorite dead guy call?
Oh, favorite dead guy. I mean, I think probably I don't know if it was my favorite. It was, man, there's been a lot of them. I mean, a lot of the decomp ones. There's a guy that had died and he's hooked up to some machine that was pumping fluids into a giant bag that filled up the bottom of a bathtub. And so he'd been there for a couple weeks and that machine was still running. And that bag was so full of this yellow greenish liquid that I thought it was about to pop when we got there. So that was a pretty nasty one, but that one's always stuck in my head just because how like disgusting it was. And what would I have done if that bag would have popped? How horrendous that would have been.
Oof. All right. So this is an old question that has been brought back by popular demand. Do you have any ghost stories or alien encounters or anything like that?
I mean, one time I was on patrol and I swear I saw like a chupacabra out there. Like it was like half dog, half human. And I don't know what that thing was to this day. I was working overnight. So I was on a gravel road and I saw something in like the bushes that I still to this day have no clue what that was.
You know, there was a guy recently that was on that was what did he, do you guys remember what the guy called it? But it was like a dog thing, and it went like across the road at like, he thought it was like 40 miles an hour or something crazy like that. But it was like a ghost looking dog thing. Is that what it sounded like?
I mean, it could be that same thing. It was weird.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was called, but something like that. Apparently that's around there. I know in my parts of Iowa, I've seen some weird stuff, but I'm also an alcoholic, so it could be the booze too. Now, I know you haven't been on patrol in a little while, but in your humble opinion, what is the best patrol car of all time?
Oh, I mean, I love my Crown Vic. That was my first one. Loved it.
That is the right answer. That is the correct answer.
You know, I'm glad I started early enough to drive one of those. Like, I had the rotating light bar, you know, didn't have LEDs or anything like that yet. So I had a little taste of the old school before it all got advanced, I guess, like it is now.
See, and people will often say, oh, well, like the Vic's not good in the snow or whatever. But like, here you are, a deputy in, you know, rural Iowa with dirt roads. Crown Vic was just fine, right?
Well, I had to put like some, yeah, we had like these like grip things you'd put on the tires when it snowed. But other than that, yeah, it was fine.
I almost feel bad asking these questions because you're not anonymous, but these are questions that people, they're burning questions. And this is why my podcast probably has no credibility, but we're going to ask him anyway.
Answer session is going downhill quick.
Oh, it's only getting worse. There are some degenerate people in this world. And you know this as a cop, and I didn't realize this until I really till recently, that people stand up to wipe their ass. The question, God, I feel so weird asking you, cause like you're a real person, like a real face.
Yeah.
But do you sit or
too
stand?
Many people
have seen
me. I don't know if I can answer these questions.
That's we'll where try. I'm at with this. Yeah. So do you sit or stand to wipe your ass is what really what America needs to know.
I mean, I'm a sitter.
So you're okay. You're normal. Do you guys hear that? He's normal. Not like you fucking weirdos.
We all have our imperfections. Not a big deal. We all
Tony,
can be perfect.
Do you stand?
Like me and Saul. Yeah. Me and Saul
fucking
stand.
Weird.
Standard. All right. You know, Ahsoka, I love you, but you got, you can't do that.
No.
Jim, okay. Just so you know, since you're new to this podcast, you could have said the most profound things in the history of the world for 6 hours.
And we still got this.
This is the only thing that anybody's ever going to comment on for the rest of the time.
I have to tell you, before I ask the worst question, it kind of drives me nuts because I think it's kind of funny and it breaks up like, I don't know, it brings some reality to like kind of the fucked up shit and policing. But it's funny to ask, you know, and kind of break everything up. But like there, you're right, Saul, like we have some super profound things said on this podcast. And then I'll ask people for feedback and they're like, oh, you know, the poop joke was great. And I'm like, damn it. I mean, it's my fault. It's my fault. But I feel like at this point, like I can't stop. Right, Saul? I mean, like I just have to kind of keep doing what I'm doing. Or do I flip a switch? Do I just, is this the moment where this becomes a professional podcast?
No,
we
it's just cops.
Fans what they want, right?
I have to. I'm a man of the people.
It's fucking cops. Every cop is mildly touched with the tism, and this is where it hits.
With that said, Saul gave me permission to ask this question. Jim, you're a hell of a detective. I really enjoyed talking to you, but America needs to know. Have you ever shit your pants?
I have not. I'm sorry. Sorry to disappoint.
Oh, man. That is disappointing. It is like, I thought you were the coolest guy ever. And now I'm like,
I just
well,
did such a short time on road patrol, man. Like I have a nice office all the time.
That's true. So you always got a bathroom nearby. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I got one more question, but I wanted to come back and.
What do you always say about that? You fucking wuss.
You're a liar, Jim. You're a liar.
He always said there are two types of people in the world. People who shit their pants and liars.
I want this guy to hang out with us, okay? I did skip over one question, and it's probably actually, this is actually a legit question, important question. What is the proudest moment of your career?
I mean, I think solving this case, it was one of the biggest things. It just kind of led it propelled my career. I wouldn't be sergeant if I probably wouldn't have been involved with this case. And it's given me a lot of opportunities. I've got to present all over the world on this case. So, I mean, being able to solve that, and not just what it did for me personally, but to, you know, what I could do for Nancy and Max and the family too, probably the proudest moment.
That's awesome. I mean, everybody kind of goes into law enforcement with these grandiose ideas of like solving crazy cases and stuff. I think a lot of people, unfortunately, maybe they don't have that case. And I'm not saying this like to be, you know, a selfish thing for you or anything, but I am happy that you came across, like, the case was for you, I guess. You know what I mean? I don't know if other people would have looked at it the same way. I mean, I watched it and saw some of the things that happened, you know, that they talked about in the documentary. And I'm like, I met some detectives that maybe would not have taken this as far as you took it. And so I think that is that's an accolade for you, even though you've never shit your pants. I do think highly of your detective work.
At least I got one thing going for me then, right?
You got that going for you. One more question before I get to the very last question. And this is for me, you know, because I've been debating getting back into policing, and that would be in Iowa. What are your thoughts overall in policing in Iowa? Is this a good state to be a cop?
I think so. I think, you know, I've seen all that stuff from the other places where your community doesn't support law enforcement work, but in Iowa, the community is very, very supportive. We've consistently got good raises. We've consistently have people from the community reach out, tell us what they were doing a good job. And very rarely do we get negativity from the community. So it's nice to have a job that when you're wearing the uniform or, you know, you got the gun and the badge on, people still come up to you and say, hey, thank you for your service. Appreciate everything you do. And that's more common than not still here in Iowa.
That's good to hear. All right, Jim, thanks again for all your time and putting up with my bullshit. Do you have
a shameless plug? Yeah.
Oh,
plug just a little bit.
Plug all you want. I mean, don't peg, but plug. And then, I was going to ask you if you had any words of wisdom too. So, all yours.
I have one question for him before we end too.
So. All right, Tony, he's fucking ruining everything.
Let him go first. You know, he's
Okay.
Yeah, it's nothing major, but we do. We've had the chance to travel all over the world to present this case. And so since this is law enforcement community, you know, if you guys are ever having any type of conferences and you're looking for a case study, you know, and you want to invite us out there, just hit me up and see what we can do. We enjoy the opportunity to travel, and we enjoyed present this case a lot more in depth than what you'd see on the documentary. We talk about some of the things we did right, what we did wrong, lessons we've learned, and things like that. It's a lot more comprehensive than the little, you know, hour and a half documentary. So that's my one shameless plug right there.
All right, Tony, what's your question?
And if it was asked, I apologize, but what was your first thought, Jim, when you saw the meme about you?
Oh, I loved it. I instantly loved it. I honestly, the stuff I get, I have a pretty good sense of humor with this stuff. So the people are like, these are the worst cops I've ever seen. Those are the Instagram posts or Twitter posts I save because I think they're hilarious. So the fact that somebody was commenting on the outfit, perfect. Loved it.
You know, the moment that you messaged me and you know, we got to talking about it, I'm like, all right, this dude gets it. He has a good sense of humor, because I think part of the thing about this environment, the policing world, is like people give each other a hard time about stuff. It doesn't mean we don't like you. It's like, it's funny, right? Like we make fun of people. I mean, these guys, you know, make fun of me nonstop, but it is what it is. Like, I feel like it's an enduring thing, but, I've had people, well,
to
you
me,
know,
it was, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
To me, it was funny because, you know, I've been on Netflix and all these shows and nobody at work really cares that much. But as soon as I was made, you know, I was on the poorly made police memes, dudes were freaking out finally. And I'm like, this is what it takes. This is what it takes to get you guys excited about this.
That's funny. Yeah, I had several dudes from your agency message me like, oh, he's a sergeant. This is so funny. But I was going to say, like, the sense of humor about it is what struck me, because I've had people that I've made memes of, and they're like, hey, that's not cool. And it's like, and to an extent, I get it. It's like a public thing, I suppose. But like, my favorite one that I had to take down was, it was like a really cringe Thin Blue Line gift at a wedding that somebody took a picture of, and I memed it. And the guy's like, hey, dude, that was at my wedding. Can you take it down? And I'm like, it's funny, though, man. Okay. You know, I'm not going to be a dick about it. But I do. I appreciate when people, you know, can laugh at themselves. I think, you know, that's kind of lost in this world, is we're all kind of, it's all fucked up. We're all kind of goofy in our own way. And it's okay to laugh at ourselves. It's funny. You know, like, I do a bunch of dumb shit. Not that what you're doing is dumb, but you do your thing. You enjoy it. You know, I think more people could strive to have a little thicker skin.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I called you the damn Tiger King and you didn't lose your mind. So there's that.
You can't wear this stuff and have this mustache without being able to take it a little bit, you know?
Well, he's like the love child of Joe Exotic and Hulk Hogan, and it's perfect.
Hell yeah, brother.
I actually was Hulk Hogan for Halloween last year.
I know. I said that.
Oh, they stalked you. They stalked you. Yeah.
Like, I called it.
By the way, since you did the Netflix thing, did you get to meet Joe Exotic? Oh, wait, he's in jail. Never mind.
Yeah.
Do you think he'll get a pardon? Do you think Joe Exotic will be free?
I don't think so. I don't think they're gonna let him out.
Do you think anybody would have watched that documentary if COVID wasn't happening? Because that's, I gotta be honest, it's probably the only reason I watched it is because I was not doing my police work and sitting in a parking lot because nobody was calling because of COVID.
You know, you might be onto something there, but I also think that story was wild enough that I think people still would have watched it.
Yeah, I suppose. You know, real quick, not to keep you too long, but I told my wife I had homework for the podcast and I had to watch this documentary because I don't watch the murder mystery things. I feel like they're, you know, kind of geared towards a certain audience, my wife.
Yeah.
And she was so excited. She's like, oh, yeah, I'll watch a murder show. And I'm like, great. Now she's got more ideas how to fucking kill me. Fantastic. But Jim, did you have any imparting words of wisdom for all the young coppers out there before we go?
I kind of mentioned it earlier, but just, you know, if you're at a smaller agency and you get a chance to look at some of those cold cases, I mean, just take that initiative. You know, don't think somebody's going to come and throw it on your desk and have you look at it. You know, take the initiative. I mean, really, this case, I wouldn't have worked unless we asked to work it. And then the other one I helped on, too, was just being like, hey, these are out there. Can I take a look at them? And, I mean, who's going to say no to, if you're offering to do more work around the agency, you know what I mean?
You're a shining beacon of light, man. I don't say that very often, but like, I'm glad to hear that there's still police work being done in this country. So good to hear. All right, folks. Well, that wraps it up. Thanks again for supporting this very poorly made police podcast. Hey, did you want to plug your Instagram? Do you want everybody knowing that?
Oh, yeah, sure. Honky Tonk Detective.
Yeah, you can't miss him. You will not miss him. You'll know it's him. And make sure you guys are checking out and supporting the fine sponsors of the podcast. Make sure you're buying all kinds of merch. Me and Ghost Patch have some new Acorn-related items I think you will enjoy. With that said, remember, there's a gun somewhere in Council Bluffs, and I'm going to have a new gun next time I go fishing. I love most of you. Bye-bye.
You'll never catch it.
Yeah, that's true. I suck at it.
Maybe if it's a little gun.
Hey! Hey!